Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? Welcome to this Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. That's right. You are now listening to WKAR's Current Sports on WKAR AM 870 105.1 FM, or heck, you may be tuned in right now on our Facebook page at facebook.com/WKAR News. You may be listening to the podcast version at WKAR.org. No matter how you may be tuned in, we appreciate that you're doing so. All right. It's a bit cold outside. The fall weather is certainly here now. I told you it was coming, right? The beginning of the week kind of fooled us. 80 degrees, sun is out, beautiful, right? Felt like summer, but snap back to reality, right? This is what the fall months bring here in October. We got a lot to get to on today's Current Sports. A lot to get to that I'm certainly excited about. We will have two guests throughout this hour of Current Sports. In just a moment, you'll be hearing a chat with Eric Doc Love and myself. Doc is a high school sports color commentator for the game, 7:30 a.m. Doc and I have been knowing each other for a few years now. I want to say like 3 or 4 years now, and he has done an outstanding job covering the local high school football scene, and he's fantastic on the air. He's been broadcasting a game of the week throughout the high school football season, and you know, the playoff picture is really becoming clear now as we have just 2 weeks left. 2 weeks left of the high school football regular season here in the Lansing area. 12 teams are already in the playoffs. So we'll get a complete local high school football rundown from Eric Doc Love. You don't want to miss that. And then I will be chatting with Tim Hurd, president of Michigan State University's Rising Black Men organization. And we're going to tackle a few interesting topics with Tim. And, you know, this chat with him is so compelling. It's a pre-recorded interview that I did with Tim yesterday, and it's so compelling that I've decided to split it up in two parts, all right? So part one will, of course, play today as we dive into Tim's thoughts on the national anthem protest in the National Football League. And I get his thoughts on Nike deciding to endorse Colin Kaepernick, who spearheaded this movement to raise awareness for inequality here in America and police brutality. And also, we'll have the conversation on how black athletes like Colin Kaepernick standing up for what they perceive is going on wrong here in America, how that has had a trickle-down effect to how black men, the youth of black men, have now viewed athletes today. All right, so it's going to be an interesting chat, and also we'll talk about the freshman class here at Michigan State University, the largest freshman class here at Michigan State University in the university's history, and also most diverse class, and how that has affected his organization and impacted his organization as well. All right, so that should be an interesting chat. And then on the back end of the show, we will be bringing you Throwback Thursday as we hop into our Current Sports time machine to take a look at exactly what happened on this particular date in sports. And also today is Big Ten Men's Basketball Media Day out in Chicago. So I'll bring you a few takeaways from that as I've been following that on Twitter since this morning. Kind of an odd time to have that, though, right? I mean, we're right in the thick of things when it comes to college football. We've still got a few weeks until college hoops starts. It's only one day I don't know. You know, Izzo is so open when it comes to us local media members. I don't know if we're getting anything out of Tom Izzo in Chicago at Big Ten Media Days. I do know, and I believe a new mantra was announced by Tom Izzo, a motto for this year's upcoming men's basketball year. Was released by Tom Izzo. But other than that, I think it's kind of the same old that we've heard from Tom as Michigan State men's basketball prepares for the upcoming year. So we'll do all of that while, of course, inviting you all to be a part of the hour. Multiple ways in which you can do so. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News and check out the live stream there. Comment below that video and you can tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports. Here are your quick hit headliners. Right. And you know, before I dive into these headliners, I tell you what, we really need like a pregame show of current sports because it got heated just a minute ago behind the glass as Justin Frommer, current sports PA and reporter, and engineer Jack Kerwin were having this debate about Scott Frost. I don't know if I want to let that. I want to tease that, Jack. Can
it's
I
an
do
outlandish
that?
Take from Justin.
Jack says it's an outlandish take from Justin. I'm going to let Justin defend himself. I want to just tease that, okay? Because it's an interesting conversation that we'll bring to the fold later on this hour. So, all right? But I'm telling you, it got heated, all right? It was like Rod and Mario behind the glass. I thought it was some bows about to be thrown. But I love it. I love the passion of our current sports team, okay? All right, and Justin joins me in studio, as well as Kyle Turk, as we bring to you our current sports quick hit headliners. I want to start with yesterday's Michigan State and Michigan softball game. Yesterday's fall ball matchup on the softball diamond between Michigan and Michigan State was halted and not resumed due to the pesky rain in the top of the second inning, and the Wolverines leading 5-2. The game was a return matchup between the two squads after the Spartans fell in Ann Arbor 10-3 on October 3rd. The Spartans continue their fall exhibition schedule with home games against with home games on Saturday against Kalamazoo Valley and 11 p.m. That game will take place at 11 p.m. and also Northwood University at 3 p.m. So Michigan State resuming action, Jackie Joseph and company, this weekend. All right, Michigan State baseball will conclude its fall practice slate with the annual Green and White World Series. The three-game intra-squad exhibition series will take place at McLane Baseball Stadium starting today, going through tomorrow and Sunday. Today and tomorrow's games 1 and 2 are slated for 7-inning contests, with the first pitch both days happening at 3 p.m. Sunday's game 3 is a 9-inning game starting at 1 p.m. All right, right now I'll pass the mic and I'll get some help from Justin Frommer as he gives us some news on Nick Ward and Cassius Winston being named to an interesting list, right? No surprise here, though, Justin.
All right, Al. Today in Rosemont, Illinois, as you mentioned earlier, Big Ten Men's Basketball Media Days taking place. Tom Izzo, along with the other coaches, took the podium talking to reporters about the upcoming season. And the conference also announced the 2018-2019 preseason All-Big Ten team. Two Michigan State players on that list, Cassius Winston, the junior point guard, and Nick Ward, the junior forward. And rounding out the rest rest of that list in the Big Ten, you got Indiana's freshman phenom, Romeo Langford. I think he's going to make some huge noise in the league this year, as well as Juwan Morgan from the Hoosiers. Got Maryland's Anthony Cowan Jr., Michigan's Charles Matthews, Minnesota's Jordan Murphy, Nebraska's James Palmer Jr., Purdue's Carson Edwards, who could honestly be probably one of, if not the best player in the country this year, and then Wisconsin's Ethan Happ. And just moving forward through the offseason, a couple weeks until Spartans kick off their exhibition schedule against Northern Michigan at the Breslin on October 30th.
All right. Thank you so much, Justin, for that. Yeah, and that's a quite impressive list, isn't it? I'm really excited to see, as you mentioned, Carson Edwards play. Also, Indiana's Romeo Langford. He's fun to watch. And, can Cassius Winston really take that next step as a leader for me? That's the big question. I mean, Cassius Winston, I mean, I was watching him in practice last week, and he's got that silky smooth jump shot, which he tremendously improved upon last year. I look for him to be a sniper this season as well from behind the arc. And Nick Ward, we'll see how Nick Ward's game evolves as well. And also whether or not that all Big Ten list changes as the year moves along as well. All right, well, Kyle Turk now rocks the mic, and he has some interesting news when it comes to this whole investigation into college hoops. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, this has been going on. I mean, gosh, we got to think back, what, maybe at least a year's worth of time it feels like since all that stuff's been going on with with paying players, this and that. So the federal corruption trial, big afternoon yesterday, a former consultant for Adidas, TJ Gasnola, testified to secretly paying the families of five recruits, DeAndre Ayton, the number one overall pick in the 2018 NBA draft, the biggest name on there. It's his sworn statement, the first time that Ayton's name was brought up during testimony in the trial. His name has been linked as well as Arizona coach Sean Miller's, and kind of previously connected to the FBI case. The whole media report back in February that kind of rocked. Gosh, I mean, that was
huge.
A bunch of different teams right before the tournament.
Right.
That alleged that Dawkins and Miller were caught on wiretap discussing eight and six figure payments. So still ongoing stuff there. No end in sight, it seems, for any of that stuff.
No, not at all. And, you know, you have a story like this that, you know, has to do with the first overall pick in the 2018 NBA draft. I mean, that's
big,
huge.
Big name guy.
I'm curious to see whether or not that affects DeAndre Ayton's first year in the league. Oh, I'm sure that it was still a long timeline.
At least, yeah.
Exactly, right? And, you know, I'll have some more thoughts on that in just a moment, because I want to make some points when it comes to AAU basketball here in America. All right, so keep it locked for that as well. The Detroit Pistons fell to the Washington Wizards last night in preseason action, 102-97, the final there. John Wall scored a game-high 32 points, while Bradley Beal added 17 of his own. Six Pistons finished in double figures, led by Andre Drummond, 17 points. Blake Griffin added 16, while Glenn Robinson III scored 13 points coming off the bench. The Pistons finish exhibition play tomorrow night against the Cleveland Cavaliers, the LeBron James-less Cleveland Cavaliers, at the Breslin Center. That's right here on the campus of Michigan State. Sad news here as well. Former basketball coach Tex Winter, who pioneered the triangle offense that propelled Michael Jordan, Chicago Bulls, and the L.A. Lakers to multiple NBA championships, has died at the age of 76. Winter began his coaching career as an assistant under Jack Gardner at Kansas State in 1947 before a two-year stint at Marquette, where he became the youngest head coach in major college basketball at the tender age of 30. He later returned to Kansas State, where he served as head coach for 15 years and led the Wildcats to two Final Four appearances and six NC2A tournament trips. Michael Jordan, in a statement to the Chicago Tribune, said, quote, "I learned so much from Coach Winter. He was a pioneer and a true student of the game. His triangle offense was a huge part of our six championships with the Bulls. He was a tireless worker. Tex was always focused on details and preparation and a great teacher. I was lucky to play for him. My condolences to his family." Again, Michael Jordan, in a statement to the Chicago Tribune in relation to the death of Tex Winter at the age of 96. And so instrumental. I'll have some thoughts on Tex Winter passing away later on this hour as well. You guys know I'm a huge Michael Jordan fan, and you know I remember watching Mike, and also in Mike's countless highlight tapes. You know, there's a lot of images of Tex and Mike just hanging out, and they were good friends. And that philosophy that Tex brought to the fold with the Bulls certainly led to a lot of success with MJ and the Bulls of the 90s. All right, I'll pass the mic now to Justin Frommer as we have some news when it comes to the Detroit Red Wings, who are in action tonight.
You know, Al, it's been a rough start for the Red Wings through the first three games. You had the overtime loss to the Blue Jackets opening night, and then not being able to pick up their first win on the West Coast trip, lost in a shootout to the Anaheim Ducks Monday night. But they'll be back home tonight as they take on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Mike Babcock, John Tavares, and Austin Matthews come to town to take on your Red Wings. Puck drop slated for 7:30 p.m. and will be on Fox Sports Detroit. Gustav Nyquist, who leads the team with 3 points, all three assists, by the way, will look to get the Red Wings their first win of the year.
Hopefully, right? It's kind of brutal.
It could be a rough one.
Yeah, we'll see.
And trust the process.
Yeah, trust the process, Jack says. And last but not least, the Lions have a new addition to the team, Kyle.
Cornerback Lindsey Pipkins off of waivers from the Colts. They also released Marquise Flowers, a linebacker. Pipkins has been on the Colts practice squad earlier this year, made one appearance in a game earlier this year, made 9 tackles in that game, was an undrafted rookie free agent, ended up with Green Bay in 2017 out of Oklahoma State. Interesting pickup. I mean,
it is.
See if they maybe need some cornerback depth. I mean, Darius Slay's had some big games so far this year.
And he's been nicked up. So.
Yeah, so maybe just a necessary kind of fit for an injury.
And Jack says, you have an interesting Pipkin story. What could that be, Jack?
So last season, week 17, the Packers traveled to Ford Field to play the Lions, and my family went to that game, and we went to breakfast at the Hudson Cafe beforehand, and his whole family was there because you could tell it was, I think he wore like number 47 or something, but it was nobody I'd ever heard of from the Packers, right? And one lady had a shirt on that said like Mama Pipkins, and you know, they all had Pipkins jerseys. So I was like, yeah. Hey, he must be on the team, and I guess he's on the Lions now.
Interesting stuff. All right, so you've had an encounter with the family of Pipkins. All right, there we go. We're rooting for him then because of that small personal connection.
Current sports connection.
Right, a current sports connection, right, to Lindsey Pipkins. I like that name as well. Lindsey Pipkins. It's got a ring to it. Like, it sounds like an artist, like a music artist. Lindsey Pipkins, everybody. All right, that's it. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in 517-355-WKAR. Go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/WKAR News and tweet the show at WKAR_sports or tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR.
Stifler fights his way into the end zone. Touchdown, Williamson. And the Hornets on the one-yard quarterback keeper get onto the board first, leading Mason 6-0.
Same play, back-to-back. Gets stood up the first time. Might as well go for it again. They're still inside the one-yard line. And you think with a big quarterback, they might go under the center to pick it up. Nope, back in that shotgun, takes it, pulls his way into the end zone.
St. John's and Haslett will do the same, and they'll share the league title with the Williamson Hornets. What a hard-fought effort tonight on the road for the Mason Bulldogs, dropping this one in a heartbreaking manner.
Well, they had three opportunities, forcing three turnovers, the muff punt, and then two interceptions. They couldn't get any points out of it. We're in territory, Williamson territory, a number of times on those, and just could not punch it in. Credit to the Williamson defense stepping up big at the most opportune moment of this ball game, and it didn't look that great offensively. They put together two very good drives, but they got touchdowns out of it, and they get a share of that CAAC red title. You can't break me down. I got gas in the tank. I got money in the bank.
love that joint from the Killers. The Man. And it's fitting walk-up music because this guy is indeed that. You just heard his voice during last week's broadcast. That audio coming, of course, courtesy of the game, 7:30 a.m., WVFN. As Nick Chase and Eric Doc Love had the call of the Mason at Williamston game. It's hard to believe that we just have 2 weeks left on the high school football regular season docket here in the Lansing area. That's mind-blowing, isn't it? Crazy stuff. All right, so let's get to him right now. We have the man himself, Eric Doc Love, to give us an update on all things local high school football. Doc, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing well, Al. It's been a long time. I appreciate you having me on the phone and having me on the show, and I look forward to chatting with you. I can't believe you're right. The season is almost over as far as the regular season for high school football, but it's been a good one so far, Al, that's for sure.
It certainly has, and I feel like it just flies by every single year, Doc. And before we dive into your take on what has transpired throughout this year in local high school football, I want to ask you the most important question that I'll ask you this entire interview, because I know that you are a big superhero guy. Have you seen Venom, and what's your take?
I have not.
You haven't?
An interview would not go by without Al asking about one, either Michigan football, or two, a superhero movie.
That's very true. Man. You know, that's what we chat about all the time, Doc. All right, so you haven't seen Venom.
I've not seen Venom yet. I have not heard things about it either.
Right.
And that makes me sad because Venom, growing up, was my favorite Spider-Man villain.
Yeah.
He's kind of villain-slash-hero type thing, and I'm a little disappointed. I'm going to see it eventually, Al. Have you seen it?
I have. And you know what? I did not listen to Rotten Tomatoes because that's the thing. I mean, you see all these reviews. I'm a big Rotten Tomatoes guy. But I looked at the audience score, and it was so high. So I'm like, all right, let me just give it a shot. Went this weekend for my birthday, and it was great. I loved it, man. Okay. I must say. I walked out of the theater saying, wow, people were tremendously overreacting. That's when sometimes the critics are just way too critical. Tom Hardy did a great job. I love the storyline. It was a good movie. So check it out. I'm curious to get your take on it.
All right. Al's recommendation, I will go see it. How about that?
Please do. All right. And we'll just do a Venom segment. When you go see it, we'll have you back on for that.
Sounds good to me.
All right, Doc. 12 teams already in the playoffs here locally.
Yeah.
5 unbeaten teams. There are another 7 that got in the playoffs at 6-1 last week. I just want you to kind of give us a rundown at when it comes to what the playoff picture looks like right now locally.
Well, I mean, you're talking about those undefeated teams, and you start with, you know, the 2-time defending state champions of Division 7, Paloma Westphalia. No one is challenging them at all. And going into the season, everybody was so hyped about that week 1 game against Ithaca, and they took it to the Yellow Jackets, and they've done that every single week for the entire season. And, you know, people are kind of surprised, not really surprised, because, I mean, the Pirates just keep right on drifting along and plundering and pillaging and whatever they're doing. And at the moment, you look and you can't see anybody down the road that you could really challenge them. Maybe someone deep in the playoffs, possibly, but, I mean, it looks like they're going right to Ford Field yet again, and possibly a third straight championship under Coach Jeremy. Jeremy Miller, they're not surprising, but it's surprising at some of the scores sometimes. DeWitt has probably been one of the biggest stories because obviously the Panthers have been good for years. You know, they've been dominating in the CAAC. They dominated way back in the gold. They dominated the red. Now they move up to the blue this year. It doesn't really matter who it is. The competition, they just managed to really dismantle people along the way. And surprising to me for DeWitt, not that they've been good and not that they've been really handling teams, is that I figured that maybe their matchup against East Lansing would be a little bit closer than it was, and it wasn't. The Panthers just kind of took care of business. And, you know, Al, if you asked the quarterback that I would want right now to lead my team no matter of anything, it would probably be Blake Gatfield for DeWitt. Now, honestly, I think that he makes the best decisions for his team, and, you know, that puts DeWitt in a great position to kind of move forward. I mean, Hazlitt's been very good this year. They're sharing the title with Williamson and St. John's in the CAAC Red. Those teams look poised to maybe make some sort of playoff run a little bit. East Lansing, despite that slip-up against DeWitt, they're still also a very good. I mean, there's other teams you can throw in there. Danville has been pretty solid in the CMAC. I mean, there's some pretty good teams in the area, Al. It's just that some of them have been kind of, you know, putting themselves above others. It's like Portland. Portland just keeps on rolling again. They're like they're headed towards another CAAC win, and you know, maybe matched up with Lansing Catholic again in the playoffs like they have been for the last couple of years.
Yes, certainly. And you know, those five unbeaten teams in DeWitt, Portland, Pouama, Westphalia, Olivet, and Morris, I mean, you know, those five have been just playing outstanding football. And you mentioned that, you know, because I was really amped up for that DeWitt and East Lansing game. And, you know, it was also East Lansing's homecoming. And then you just see DeWitt go out there and just make it look easy. What is it about DeWitt? Because every single year, Coach Rob Zimmerman has just, you know, it's kind of like, it's like a factory over there, a football factory.
Yeah.
And they just keep on breeding just great talent where every single year they are in the running. Just scheme-wise, though, Doc, I mean, when you watch them from the X's and the O's standpoint, what do they do better than the opposition?
Well, I mean, you talk about it starts coaching, but it doesn't just start with varsity coaching. It starts with the JV and the freshmen and the lower levels. If I'm correct, they tend to all run the exact same schemes with a little bit of touches here and there, but for the most part, it's the basics, and it's the same thing they do on every level. And so when kids get to freshmen and the JV and the varsity, when they're ready for that, they already know most of the stuff, and they'll throw in new wrinkles, and they'll add more things to it when they get to the varsity level, and you know, they make adjustments, obviously, depending upon what their opponent's going to do that week. But it really just starts off with all the players on every level seem to know what they need to do to play for Coach Rob Zimmerman. And so, you know, sometimes you get classes where the guys don't know all the plays, but the senior class and the juniors that he has on that team right now, they know everything. And it doesn't seem to matter, no matter what the formation, the different variations of it. They just know, like they have the knowledge, the football knowledge to just go out there on the field and know what they need to do, and they get it done, and it's been very successful. They don't turn the ball over, and they make the right decisions when they need to.
I tell you, it's all about that muscle between the ears, right? And like you said, Doc, I mean, you made an excellent point there. Because I've heard that as well. I mean, when it comes to the scheme and the playbook, I mean, that's a playbook that has been hammered to those young men on the varsity football team. I mean, since they, you know, have been in the DeWitt football system for a long time, so they aren't shell-shocked when they look at the playbook at the varsity level. And I think it just keeps on rolling from there. Excellent stuff there. All right, so the other seven teams that got into the playoffs last week at 6-1, Doc. I mean, you briefly touched on, you know, East Lansing and Hazlitt, but, you know, also Lansing Catholic, Carson City Crystal, Alma, Williamston, and Ithaca. Out of those teams, out of those seven teams, who do you think has the best opportunity to surprise some people and make a deep run at a state championship later on this season?
Well, I saw Williamston last week, and they didn't play that well at home. It was their homecoming. They were taking on Mason. Mason had been had a down year last year. They've been making a comeback this season. They've been playing really well. Austin Stifler, their senior quarterback, for Williamson, he kind of struggled, but their defense is very good. Stifler can do things on the ground as well. They've got weapons like Kerry Haney and stuff, and guys like that, so they can get some things done. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Williamson went out there, won a district, maybe made a little bit of a deeper run. Carson City Crystal, you know, I haven't seen them play this year, but I know they've got some terrific players. Drew Stout, especially, has been a fantastic runner for them. Elma, another team that's, you know, north of our area, I have not seen, but I know Breck Allward leads the area in rushing. They've got 1,400 yards and 20 touchdowns. I know their run game has been very good. And you go back to Ithaca, yes, they lost to Pouama, Westphalia. Yes, it was very lopsided in week one. I'm not counting them out, Al. They're still a machine up there themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, getting that Division VI, they could still make a lot of noise. There's no way you can't discount Ithaca despite that one loss, because they're still really good. They're still really well coached.
Exactly. And you know, I looked at that game, and I had to ask myself, okay, is Pouama Westphalia that good or Ithaca that bad? And I think just Pouama Westphalia is just that good this season, right?
Yep. That's it. And we were all asking the same question now. Is Ithaca having a down year, or is PW just that good? Now that we've gone through several other weeks and we get up here to week 8, you look at it and you say, PW's just really that good. That's all it really boils down to.
Again, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with the one, the only, Eric Doc Love, high school sports color commentator for the game, 7:30 a.m. Doc, there are another 5 teams that are just 1 win away from making the postseason. Okemos, Lakewood, Ovid-LC, Saranac, and Dansville. Who out of that list, who out of those 5 do you think accomplishes booking a ticket to the postseason come this Friday night?
I think Dansville's got a very good chance. I think more than likely the team that I see tomorrow getting into the playoffs is Okemos. It's been a couple of years. They had a great start last year. They were 4-0 and then tripped up and went 5-4 in the regular season. They struggled because of injuries. I think Okemos gets it done, and I think they get in. They've got that new field turf up there for the Chiefs. They're going to be at Holt tomorrow night. That's actually the game we're broadcasting on the game, 7:30 a.m.
Big game. That's a big game, Doc.
Okemos at Holt. Holt has been up and down this year. The Rams have been okay. Mm-hmm. I think Okemos gets it done tomorrow night, and you know, I think I'll be there watching it firsthand. I think Dansville gets in for sure, and I'm pretty sure Okemos is going to get in tomorrow night too. No offense to the Holt fans. They got a good shot.
Yeah.
The Rams get to come out there and punch him and knock him down. I think Okemos gets in tomorrow too.
And you know, there's 2 teams here locally that are 2 wins away. Do you see Fowler and St. John's making the postseason this year, Doc?
You know, it's going to be tough for both of those teams. Maybe a little easier for Fowler because they're in such a lower division. They're in Division 8 because they're a smaller school. They've got a better chance. St. John's maybe can sneak in. You know, it'd be weird to see a team that ties and get the share of their conference title and not make it into the playoffs, but it's possible for the Red Wings. I think they might eke in, same with Fowler, but we'll find out, Al. We'll find out next week.
Yes, we certainly will. And, you know, before I get your take on the games you've broadcasted so far this season alongside Nick Chase, Doc, I want to ask this. You know, going back to those 5 unbeaten teams, out of the 5 unbeaten, DeWitt, Portland, PW, Olivet, and Morris, out of those 5 unbeaten teams, which are the most likely to finish undefeated? If you could put a number on how many of those 5 finish the year with an unblemished record, the regular season at least, which teams would you peg to do that?
Regular season-wise?
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it past any of those teams to go undefeated out, honestly.
Right.
I could easily see all of them going 9-0 this year. Portland, especially because of their defense. Their offense has been good, but their defense has been that much better. We know DeWitt is just balanced overall. They can run, they can pass, they can play a great D. I've not seen Olivet, but I know their offense is spectacular, and their defense has been shutting some people down. Honestly, I think they could all easily go 9-0 this year and get into the playoffs. What they can do as far as deep runs, you know, for Portland, it comes upon what kind of draw they get in the districts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for Olivet, I know they've been, you know, pretty much dominating all year. Again, it comes to the playoffs, if what they get in the draw, and if they can get past in their districts and get into the regionals. You know, I don't know what area they would be in so far, but you know, I honestly think they could all go 9-0. I think they probably all will,
and they're all that good. Doc, when you look at the games that you guys have broadcasted this year, again, I really enjoy listening to you alongside Nick Chase deliver, you know, the game of the week every single Friday night on the game, 7:30 a.m. You guys do an outstanding job. The games you broadcasted so far this season, again, as we have 2 weeks left here of the regular season in local high school football, which games have been the most entertaining to broadcast?
Well, week 1 was very good. I enjoyed the Okemos Mesa game, actually. That game was very tight. Okemos scored late. They got that real close victory. It was 14-7 or 21-14, something like that. It was a very close ball game. And last week's game actually wasn't that. I mean, for another low-scoring game and Williamson not playing, you know, that great offensively, the Williamson-Mason game. So I got a couple of games with Mason that have been very close ball games. They've been very entertaining. And, you know, they've come down to some crucial key plays and, you know, some good defensive steps. And Those have been the most entertaining so far, but I'm looking forward to tomorrow night, Ultimus and Holt, because, Al, you know, I've been the color commentator for a very long time. This is my first chance going play-by-play. It's my first chance doing play-by-play for the Chiefs and Rams, yes.
That's amazing. Well, so you're not going to be on the air by yourself, right, Doc? Who's joining you?
No. I've got somebody filling in for my position. Brandon Howell, he used to work for us at the game 7:30. He is stepping in. Nick Chase has got other duties with the chili cook-off tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And so I'm stepping in and doing the play-by-play. Al, I'm nervous, man.
I was just about to ask that.
I'm nervous.
So, hold on, Doc. When it comes to you stepping into this new role now, I mean, but hey, you know the game so well, and you've listened to and been alongside many great play-by-play men in your career. I mean, how are you preparing for this?
Including Al. Come on now. I've seen a couple times.
Yes, I did. I remember back in the day, you and I rocked the mic. Those were always fun times, Doc. So how are you preparing for this?
You know what? I'm listening to some games, a lot of recollection from memory. I've done a little bit of extra digging into the archives and listen to some games that I've had recorded in the past and just trying to get that down. I've been alongside for a number of years doing, the color commentary, so I know a lot of the play-by-play, what it takes, and, it's not going to be simple for me, that's for sure, but I'm going to do my darndest, Al.
I respect anybody who, any broadcaster who does play-by-play or color commentating for a living, because it is not an easy job whatsoever. And, Doc, you make it look easy, and I can't wait to see and hear, I should say, your debut as a play-by-play man in the world of high school football. I'm looking forward to listening to that. And can you remind our listeners out there, how can they tune in to listen to you broadcast the Okemos and Holt game?
Well, of course, it's always on the air, 7:30 a.m. on your radio dial. If you get that signal, if not, you can go to thegame730am.com. That's the website. We always stream the games on there. And we have an app, free app for your cell phone. You got an Android, you got an iPhone, whatever it may be. You can listen on there as well. So we got you covered, man. You can listen to all the games. And, of course, we'll have a Week 9 game. We'll have all the playoffs. And hopefully, Al will get to broadcasting at least one championship game from Ford Field this year. That would be fun. I've been going there almost every single year since I started broadcasting. And I've been lucky enough to cover these teams in the area. So we're hoping that at least one team can make that nice little drive down there to Detroit.
Yeah, let's certainly cross our fingers. All right, Doc, or should I say Al Michaels?
No. Let's not go there, Al. Come on now.
We won't go that far. Doc, I know you're going to rock it tomorrow. I'll be listening, my friend. Good luck, all right?
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Always great talking to you.
You got it. Again, the one, the only, Eric Doc Love, high school sports color commentator for the game 7:30 a.m. or should I say play-by-play man for the game 7:30 a.m. as he makes his play-by-play debut on that broadcast of Holt and Okemos tomorrow. That should be fun to listen to. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll have a chat with Tim Hurd, president of Rising Black Men, as Tim discusses the national anthem protest in the National Football League and the impact it has had on young black men and how they perceive athletes today. That and so much more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Yes, it does feel good here on this Thursday edition of Current Sports here on October 11th, 2018. I'm currently right now on my Facebook page watching Tom Izzo live speak to the media at Big Ten Men's Basketball Media Days. And I just kind of put my volume on while we were on break just a minute ago. And Izzo is discussing the FBI investigation that has riddled the sports of men's college basketball in really a negative light. It really has. And, I heard Tom say, look, he's proud for the most part how the Big Ten has been able to keep it clean. And again, I'm paraphrasing here, but and he's proud of how his program has been able to stay out of that kind of negative light.
in regards to, you know, paying players and, you know, recruiting violations, that kind of thing. So, again, Izzo is speaking at a round table right now as media members kind of throw questions at him. All right. What I want to do right now is go to a pre-tape interview that I conducted with Tim Hurd, president of the organization here on campus, entitled Rising Black Men. He is the president and founder of Rising Black Men, which is a black men mentorship program here on Michigan State University's campus. And I wanted to invite Tim on the show to discuss how young black men now perceive athletes today in light of the national anthem protests in the NFL and other athletes who have decided to let their voice be heard on inequality here in America and police brutality here in America. And we talk about, you know, other topics as well. And the interview was so good. I want to split it up into two parts. You'll hear part one right now, as also Tim weighs in on the largest and most diverse incoming freshman class in Michigan State University's history this year, and how that has affected his organization or impacted his organization. But I start this chat with Tim on getting his thoughts on Nike deciding to endorse Colin Kaepernick.
Colin Kaepernick in the media, there are a lot of differing viewpoints about him. But like anybody who's a pioneer in what they do, from Muhammad Ali changing his name, from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali, he was getting scrutinized at the time, but now he's a celebrated hero. So right now, Colin Kaepernick is facing a lot of scrutiny, but he will be a celebrated hero, you know, in a couple of years, maybe 10, 15, 20, however many years. But this move that they made is a really good marketing strategy.
For you personally, Tim, I mean, when you first heard of Colin taking a knee, and because you know, historically, when you're at a sporting event and you hear the national anthem being played, it's a sign of respect, right? You stand up, you put your hand over your heart, you sing if you want to, but you know, you acknowledge it in some way, shape, or form. And Colin taking a knee got a lot of backlash initially, but when you heard his explanation, it was like, okay, I get where you're coming from now. What was your initial reaction? Were you in support of Colin from the start?
Mm-hmm. Well, when I first heard about it, I wasn't necessarily in support or against him. I just kind of wanted to figure out the reasoning behind it. And when I heard his opinions on why he was doing it in the first place and the fact that he talked to a veteran and the veteran gave him the idea to take a knee, I was all for it, just because there needs to be light shed on injustices that are perpetuated against black people and people of color in the United States. And I think this is a great way, because a lot of people tune into the National Football League, and there's over a million people who watch it on any given Sunday, any given Monday, or whenever it's on. So I think that this is a great platform to use to talk about these injustices.
For you as a black male living here in America, have you had any experiences with the law?
So I haven't been unjustly pulled over. In fact, I've never been pulled over, but I have had
encounters. You've never been pulled over?
Never been pulled over. Yeah, I'm a kind of a smart driver. You know, I do a little 65 and a 70, so I'm not trying to catch any tickets, anything like that. But I have had encounters with police officers just because of my background, and where I'm from is predominantly white. And sometimes being that only black person on the block, you kind of stick out. It's like a sore thumb. So there have been some instances, but they've been very few.
Gotcha. Very few for you. But you know, you sympathize with those, because I, you know, for me, I've had one, well, actually two, and I've had family members who have just been, you know, driving while black. You know what I mean? You hear that a lot, and those are stories that, you know, when we look at a Michael Brown, a Philando Castile, I feel like, you know, whenever those lights, you know, do flash on, if I'm in the vicinity of them, my heart kind of skips a beat, Tim. I can't lie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I can definitely empathize from that, from just being a black male. Mm-hmm. So it evokes a lot of emotions when I see things like the Philando Castile or the Alton Sterling, and I see these young black men who are dying, and they're following the rules of the police officer, and they're doing what they're everything that they were ordered to do, but still you lose their life. So it definitely does evoke a lot of emotions out of me, and I can empathize with that.
Tim, do you feel like other athletes, specifically black athletes, should use their platform to do what Cap is currently doing?
Mm-hmm. I do. I think so. Just because these are the people who a lot of people within the community, black community, and also other communities look up to. Because when you go to sporting events and you look at the demographics, it's not predominantly black in these areas, is predominantly white, and these are a lot of the people who are patrons to these certain sporting events, so they have a lot of power, and those are one of the only times that black men are, all eyes are on them if they're not in a political office or they're not in another position of power. So those sports in that position that they have is a position of power, and using that platform to acknowledge and to also shed light onto some of the injustices, I think, is very, very important.
And it takes a lot of courage to do that, right?
It does. It takes a tremendous amount of courage. So having a purpose and knowing your why and knowing the reasoning behind you're doing it, and not just doing it just because people are going to scrutinize you and people are going to ask you about it, and you need to be sound and resilient in the reason and your purpose on why you're doing it in the first place. So I don't think that everybody should do it, but people who feel like they have a calling, like Colin Kaepernick, and like people who support him, like Carmelo Anthony, like LeBron James, who just recently talked about how he supports Colin Kaepernick and the things that he's doing. I think that if you feel a calling to do it, then you should. But if you don't feel a calling, I don't think that is your place to do it.
I definitely hear you on that. All right, Tim, I want to talk about this campus now because, you know, this story got a lot of press because it's the first time this has happened here at Michigan State. This freshman class currently here at MSU is the largest and most diverse class in the university's history. I want to know from the rising black men perspective how you guys have been impacted by that.
We've been impacted by just having people show up more at our learning objectives, which we have every other Friday from 3 to 5 and 175 Brody here on campus. So we will have our learning objectives, and that's where we talk about different conversations such as how to navigate a predominantly white institute while being a black male and dealing with microaggressions and also this crab in a barrel effect. But we have critical conversations relevant to us as collegiate young black men. And during these conversations, there you get a stream of freshmen who might walk in because they heard about it from somebody else, or they might have seen us on social media or checked out our website, and they come in and they're welcomed like family almost, and it's just really a big support system. So I've definitely seen an increase in the numbers lately.
Just walking around this campus, have you noticed a more diverse student body?
Mm-hmm. Not really. I would say I haven't, just because it still is a predominantly white institute, and when you think about 50,000 plus you know, people here all together collectively, and African Americans consisting about like around 2% of the population, you don't see it. But if there's like an event where there's a conglomeration or just a large amount of black people, then you definitely see it then, because you can see the increase in numbers just a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the crab in a barrel mentality. I just want to kind of piggyback on that for a second. You guys addressed that amongst the group, the Rising Black Men organization. And I'm curious because that is a conversation that is had a lot in the black community, because it is so true and it's prevalent in a lot of different areas in black culture. You know, I don't know what it is, but our culture has a tendency, if we see one of us doing well, sure, there's a lot that support that individual, but there are some that, you know, what's that word, haters? There's a lot of haters out there as well. When you guys have that conversation among yourselves, what is that conversation like, and what do you guys talk about?
Yeah, so when we have that conversation, we talk about this saying that all your skin folk ain't your kinfolk. So this idea of, even though people might be black or people might have the same complexion as you, they might not support you. And you know what? That's okay. But in my organization, it's not okay. And a lot of my guys come from Detroit. So they come from the east side, they come from the west side, and you have divisiveness that happens within the city in terms of, oh, the east side versus the west side. And you bring that mindset up here and you kind of separate yourself, whether you went to Cass or you went to Renaissance. You have that little separation here. And it might be all fun and games there back at home, but once you get up here, it's not fun and games anymore, because you're isolating yourself from opportunity, you're isolating yourself from fellowship, and that's just something that I don't tolerate within my organization. And in order to make the change that we want to, in terms of being our best academically and our best socially, we need to work on ourselves first, and we need to make sure that we're in support of one another, because we're going to go through a lot of trials and tribulations attending this predominantly white university.
And at the end of the day, it's all about brotherhood, right? It's all about supporting one another. Why do you think this mentality still exists among us as black people, and specifically when it comes to rising black men, when it comes to black males in general, why does this mentality still exist today?
Mm-hmm. I think this mentality still exists just because we're still conditioned in a way, depending on where you're coming from, depending on where you grow up at. Like, there's still a lot of hate amongst one another. But I think that stems from a historical perspective of even when African Americans arrived to the United States way back in the 1600s, around 1607, during the founding of Jamestown. And there was this thing that was perpetuated in different ways of putting black people against one another. And I think it's just, besides that, besides even the historical aspect, I think it's just a thing of human nature, mm-hmm. of people just to be put against one another. I think it's just in our nature as humans to just have this envy and greed and things that are evolved or associated with a negative connotation. So I think it's a people thing more so than just a race thing. But I do think here in America, that race thing is very prevalent, and that race thing has been a key factor in the reason and why we put each other down.
Awesome stuff from Tim Hurd. Very, very compelling and honest. And wait till you hear tomorrow's part two, because we kind of go more in depth into the whole crab in a bucket mentality. And Tim announces a partnership with MSU Athletics as it pertains to rising black men. All right. So don't miss that on the Friday version of Current Sports. As we have just minutes left here, I do want to hit a final break. And then when we come back, Tom Izzo right now during this roundtable interview, he looks frustrated as he's being asked questions when it comes to the whole ESPN story of last year and the investigation. And he has some very, talk about honest, some very candid things to say. All right. So we'll bring that to you in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We have 5 minutes left, and I want to spend these 5 minutes by addressing Tom Izzo, who is at a roundtable interview right now. I've been watching the live stream, as well as the Current Sports team behind the glass. We've been checking out this live stream courtesy of M Live Sports, and Tom Izzo has given some very to-the-point statements concerning what happened last year with the ESPN story by Paula Levine and Outside the Lines. We all know that the whole Maryland press conference interaction with an ESPN reporter that followed Tom to the locker room inquiring into the whole Travis Walton situation and just the details of that ESPN report. And Tom has been he's gotten frustrated at times. He's looked angry at times during this chat, and he's just kind of putting it all out there as Tom Izzo usually does. He's always going to wear his emotions on his sleeve. And you know, last year he could not comment on the details of what was being alleged in the ESPN report just for legal matters. But now that's all said and done now. The NCAA has cleared Michigan State of any wrongdoing, and Tom is just kind of just giving you his side of the story. One of the most compelling quotes coming out of this sit-down is Tom saying this. This is I'm reading from Chris Solari's Twitter, at Chris Solari on Twitter. Quote, the lowest point, well, Tom Izzo said, the lowest point in my life was being in a picture on ESPN with Mark D'Antonio and, quote, a pedophile, Larry Nassar. Lowest point in his life. Also, Izzo on allegations of sexual assault in program. The thought that I tried to cover up
and hide something like that makes me sick. So Izzo has been, again, you know, he's been chatting with reporters, and again, he still is right now during the roundtable portion of Big Ten Media Days out in Chicago. And Tom is just kind of just letting you know that, look, man, I did everything right, and I have sympathy for the survivors. He said that he sat down with some of the survivors of Larry Nassar and also sat down with their families, and he didn't try to cover anything up. And again, he calls calls it the lowest point in his life when he saw that picture that ESPN put together, which I thought was wrong. I thought that was totally wrong to loop Larry Nassar on the same graphic of Tom Izzo and Mark D'Antonio, two men who have been found guilty of nothing, when you have Larry Nassar, who is the biggest pedophile in American history. I'm going to have some further thoughts on this because, again, we just watched it with Jack and the current sports crew behind the glass. We just watched probably like 5 minutes of it, 5 to 7 minutes of it during that pre-tape interview with Tim Hurd. But you can look at Tom Izzo's demeanor. He was not happy. He is not happy right now.
He's pissed, man.
Yeah,
big time.
He really is. He
rightfully
really is.
So.
And I get it. I totally get it. And we're going to tackle more of what he had to say because he also commented on recruiting violations in college basketball and where basketball is headed as it pertains to AAU and so on and so forth. So that will lead tomorrow's current sports, okay, as well as we'll preview Michigan State and Penn State. And we'll talk some NFL. Going to be a loaded show tomorrow. One that you do not want to miss, and we'll also play part two of that chat with Tim Hurd. That and more on the Friday version of Current Sports. Until then, we are on a 23-hour break. Be easy, people.